America has seen an immense amount of change since the founding fathers gave birth to our nation. John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, and George Washington stand as visionaries in their time, but they may not even recognize today's United States of America. In his new book, We the People, the modern-day figures who have reshaped and affirmed the founding fathers' vision of America, social historian, best-selling author, and Fox News political analyst Juan Williams examines the lives and ideas of people he calls America's modern-day founders. Again, the name of the book is We the People, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Juan Williams back to the roundtable. Always good to have you on the program, sir.
Joe, it's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
What brought you to this idea of wanting to look at these modern-day cultural pioneers?
Well, how many people, I bet they're calling into your show, but I hear them all the time. They say, you know, this is not the country I grew up in. Or, you know what, where's the America that I once knew? It's almost like people have this strong sense that something is changing very quickly on them. I feel like a stranger in my own country, they say. So I thought to myself, I think people are reacting to the tremendous rate of change taking place right now. And it's change in terms of the immigration, the high level of immigration. It's change in terms of the economic issues and people feeling economic anxiety. It's changes in terms of the demographics, with Hispanics growing in large numbers now, the second largest racial group in the country. And I thought, you know, we need to look at how we came to this point, especially in this 2016 election. How come these issues have bubbled up? What are the roots of them? And so I started to go back, look at all the issues, Joe, and in every case I could find a person who was active, who took advantage of the Founding Fathers' principle, constitutional spirit, and made changes in America to make it the America that Joe and Juan live in today.
The book really does span generations, and I'm curious as to the definition of what you wanted to look for in these figures that reshape and affirm what the Founding Fathers had as a vision for this country.
Well, in every case, I want to find out what drove them, what made them persuaded that they had to get involved, get active, get organized to create this change. I was talking to you a moment ago about immigration, which, of course, Donald Trump has used as a springboard. I mean, it is the one big issue that he talks about, everything from building a wall to limiting the number of Syrian refugees that come in the country. He is just a strong voice in terms of saying immigration's out of control in this country. Where did this issue come from? Well, some people might say, oh, remember President Bush tried to pass immigration reform in 06. Other people might say, oh, but it really stems back to the 1980s and President Reagan when he passed immigration reform and said it would end the influx of illegal immigrants. It didn't happen. So maybe that's the source. But I think the real source is you go back and you find two Irish guys who had been told stories in their family for generations, going back to their great-grandfather, about how the Irish were treated in Boston by the Brahmins, the Protestant elite of that city, when they came. And those two young men become President John F. Kennedy and Senator Ted Kennedy. And President John F. Kennedy writes for the B'nai B'rith, a Jewish fraternal organization. He writes, you know, it's wrong when America's immigration system doesn't allow in people fleeing Nazi oppression and the Holocaust. And then he's joined by people from places like Italy and Greece who want to reunify their families, but find, again, immigration laws limiting who can come to the country. That then leads to the passage of the 1965 immigration law that opens the door to immigration from all over the world. Remember, previously it was limited to Western Europe. Now it's all over the world and increases the number of people who can come into America's doors. That's the source. And so I go back and tell the story of the Kennedy brothers. And it's like that in telling stories about even how we tolerate surveillance today, you know, cameras on lampposts, supposedly for red lights. But if Alexander Hamilton, George Washington were talking to you, Joe, they'd say, Joe, you put up with constant surveillance? That's not the country we created. So who created this country? And in response to that question about surveillance, I think we'd point to New York City's police commissioner, Bill Bratton. He's had tremendous influence, used computer statistics to plot where crimes occur. who's committing those crimes, and anticipate where they're going to next occur. So Bratton is absolutely one of the new founders of modern America.
Now, Bill Bratton is someone where the practices, his practices regarding surveillance are, in many cases, nationally accepted policing techniques. I want to go back to the Kennedy brothers for a moment, because did they not fail in some way when we look at our current situation where the message of a major party candidate is the direct opposite of what they had envisioned, and is, and with it has gained a popularity amongst at least a portion of the electorate?
Well, this is an interesting point, but again, you know, part of the idea behind We the People is, let's get away from the headlines for a second. Let's look at what's behind the headlines. Let's look at what are the dynamic forces that have driven this issue to the forefront. Now, in the case of immigration, you also got to tie it into opposition to trade deals. Remember, Trump also says China's ripping us off. They're cheating us. All these other countries, Mexico and the rest, they're taking advantage of us. We make bad deals. This is all part of Trump's attitude that, you know what, the United States right now is doing too much for the world and not enough for Americans. So if you said to the people, the Kennedy brothers back in the 50s and 60s, as they were pushing immigration reform and getting it done, you know what, there's going to be in 2016 a candidate who is so opposed to you, will you take that as a repudiation of all that you're doing? I think they'd say, well, wait a second. I also see that America now is more diverse, made up of more people from all over the world than ever before in 2016. I see big corporations taking advantage of talent that previously would not have been available to them. I see American schools, colleges, universities filled with people from around the world. America is the beacon when it comes to higher education globally. And, of course, trade. And you have the upside of trade and the downside. The downside, it has cost some people jobs and led to the resentment we know. The upside, we know that America benefits from trade. We, in fact, are a plus in terms of coming out on the economic side of trade deals. But doesn't feel that way to some people that you point out. But nonetheless, from the Kennedy brothers' perspective, they transformed America, and I think they would say they transformed it for the better.
So, and then I promise we'll get away from Donald Trump, which I know is really hard for any of us in the media to do, but we'll try to do it. So my last question on this, which is, do you envision, could you see a scenario where then in 30, 40 years, God willing, we're here to have a similar conversation, Juan?
And that would be wonderful.
And you have a new, you have a sequel to this book out. Could Donald Trump be one of those modern day founders?
Well, I don't think he's reached that epic yet. I mean, the idea is that these are people who made a lasting difference. So we're talking about something the Kennedy brothers did, you know, in the 1960s. The founding fathers were talking about something they did 240 years ago in terms of putting in place a constitution that has held, that it's like steel, Joe. Yes, it's very strong, but it's also flexible and been able to deal with everything from a civil war to a Great Depression to more recently, you know, a tie presidential race that has to be decided by a Supreme Court without the people revolting. All of that is true within the spirit of the Constitution. So when you look at someone like Donald Trump, let's say he gets elected president. What kind of president is he? What does he stand for? How does he transform the country? That's how I found the people who I put on my new Mount Rushmore. And on the cover of the book, the new Mount Rushmore has on it Ronald Reagan, Billy Graham, Thurgood Marshall, Eleanor Roosevelt. These are people that I think in 100 years from now, if Juan and Joe somehow they discover something to keep us alive and we're having this conversation 100 years from now, we'd say, yes, no doubt about it, those people made a difference in American life. At the moment, Donald Trump is a sensation, and he's all everybody wants to talk about or hear about, but I'm going to tell you, it's not clear that he's going to have that kind of historical impact that people will still be talking about him 100 years from now.
So as promised, we'll change the conversation. I want to look at the Supreme Court and the direction on race, and you write about Earl Warren and Thurgood Marshall.
Well, this is an interesting avenue of conversation, and Joe, I can always count on you for that. Thank you. You know, because it's not only that there's a chapter on Earl Warren, Thurgood Marshall, as they post-World War II begin to change the nation. Of course, the seminal event, I think a moment in American history, is Brown v. Board of Education, 1954. Earl Warren is the Chief Justice. Thurgood Marshall is the lead counsel to the NAACP Legal Defense Fund and argues for the end of legal segregation in America's public schools. That, of course, then sets the civil rights movement in motion and, of course, changes America in terms of the way that the government deals with race, no longer enforcing legal segregation. In fact, now countering segregation. But the reason I say it's so interesting to me is that there's another chapter in the book, and this chapter focuses on President Reagan and Ed Meese, and they are reacting to Earl Warren, Thurgood Marshall, Bill Brennan, and people that they identify as activist liberal judges who believe in a living constitution, and in that living constitution they can find new rights in it, they can find new ways to protect things like abortion rights, to give rights to gay people to marry. You know, to them, this is not what the court should be doing. This is a court that's intervening and intruding on the rights of the people in terms of their votes, in terms of the congressional prerogative, even the president's prerogative. So they nominate and get people on the court like Justice Scalia, who recently died, Joe. And then they are confronted by people like President Obama, who nominates Merrick Garland. And Garland, it's more than just that he's a Democrat. It's that he believes in a living constitution, that he agrees that the Constitution can be molded to deal with something like gay rights. That's not what Scalia said. In fact, in his dissent to the gay marriage decision, Scalia said that the majority was discovering rights in the Constitution that nobody had intended. The gay, you know, the Founding Fathers would have been appalled at the idea of gay rights, and certainly no one in the intervening centuries found that there was a right to gay marriage in the Constitution until this court did. So you have to understand this tremendous contest of wills over how you read the Constitution. And it becomes a contest in the book between Ronald Reagan, Ed Meese orbit and the Thurgood Marshall, Earl Warren orbit. Separate chapters, but both in both cases, these are people who made a difference, who helped to shape America as we live in it today.
And as you point out in the with Ronald Reagan and Ed Meese, that this cornerstone of American conservatism that began in the 21st century, and what's fascinating now is where that is headed. So a lot of these are not just that, but many of these stories are very much works in progress, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. You know, one of my favorites is somebody who's a native of New York State, and that's Eleanor Roosevelt. And the reason I say it's a favorite is because people are like, I know that name. I know Eleanor Roosevelt. I know she was FDR's wife, and they know all about all the scandals, you know, Lucy Mercer, who was FDR's mistress, and they know they have all that. But then they say, really? She belongs on the new Mount Rushmore? Why is that? And I say, because here you have someone who pushed after World War II for America not only to get involved and join the United Nations, to establish the United Nations, but then she is one of the authors of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And what this says is that America's vision of what protections are for individuals, that our rights, Joe's rights, should be the protections for people all over the world. So that when you have a situation like people in the Middle East fighting against a dictator and standing up for their rights, or a little girl getting shot in the head by the Taliban, Americans react like, you know what, we want to support individuals who are struggling for their own freedoms and rights. Remember, George Washington in his farewell address counseled against extensive involvement in the affairs of other countries. He said those kind of entanglements would sink America. Here comes Eleanor Roosevelt then, more than a century later, and says, no, it's essential that we become the number one ambassadors of human rights to the world. And today, that's just accepted as who we are. When we hear about a crisis overseas, when we hear about this fellow Joseph Kony in Africa abducting girls, raping girls, committing abuses, you get an internet sensation, not only among adults, but young people who say, President Obama, go get Joseph Kony. He's hurting little girls. We've got to stop it. That way of thinking, that has the total signature of Eleanor Roosevelt on it.
There are other women on the list, including Betty Friedan, which is an interesting story, and also Rachel Carson, obviously, with her landmark book, Silent Spring. A lot of those names are known, Martin Luther King and Charlton Heston, Eleanor Roosevelt, Milton Friedman. I when I'm going down the list, I come to Robert Ball, and I don't know who that is. should I know who that is?
Well, you, given what you do for a living, you might, but it's pretty obscure, so no penalty points for Joe on
okay,
this.
Okay, all right, thank you.
But I will tell you that if you must have taken the Acela at some point, and if you're passing through the Acela when it cuts through Baltimore, going past the Social Security Building, which is the home of the United States Social Security System, that building is named for Robert Ball. And it's a very important building, and obviously in all of our lives, Social Security is the number one social safety net program in the country. And not he didn't create it. Obviously, it's created by FDR back in the 30s. But right from the start, Robert Ball, son of a minister, is working on Social Security, how to make it viable, how to fund it, who gets it, changing the rules of Social Security. He basically designs the structure. And then it goes from the New Deal of Roosevelt to the Great Society of Johnson, and it's Robert Ball who creates Medicare and then Medicaid. So, Joe, wait a second. This is incredible. You see Robert Ball and the whole idea of how a social safety net for the American people can work despite our capitalistic economic structure as so essential to the way we live today. And even when it comes to something as controversial as Obamacare, what you see is that Robert Ball's imprint is on Obamacare, given the work that he did on Medicare. So Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, the entire social safety net, really, it goes back to this one man, Robert Ball, and that's why his story is so important. That's why I think he's one of the new founders of the way we live in America in the 21st century.
There are figures on this list who, and I guess to some extent they all had their share of controversy, but you look at somebody like Henry Kissinger, a very controversial figure.
No question about it, and even today, in terms of people talking to me about the book, they say, you know, why do you not focus on what Henry Kissinger did in so many areas, but Vietnam is the one that people most often point to and ascribe blame to him for his decisions. But you know what? The big change in American diplomacy and our foreign relations, the one that's still with us to this day, and we were talking about Trump, we could never get away from him, Joe, but remember he was saying China's ripping us off, China's taking advantage. The big change in American foreign relations since the Cold War was to move away from some sort of detente with the Soviet Union, with the Soviets being the communist and the United States being the capitalist and the democracy, and say, you know what, one way to lessen the influence of the Soviet Union around the world is to create an alliance with China. That's Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon. That's triangulation. And that has shifted power away from the Soviet Union. Of course, the Soviet Union doesn't even exist anymore. Now we have Russia and Putin. But all of this traces back to the genius, I'll say it, genius, of Henry Kissinger and his ability to move the pieces on the world stage in such a way as to be advantageous to America's interest, both economic and political interest, and protect us. It's an incredible story. But again, I think people sometimes, in looking at the headlines and saying, oh, you know, I know Henry Kissinger is a controversial figure, we lose, I think, the historical, the long view of saying, that guy changed the world and he changed America. And goodness gracious, we're still living with the consequences of his decisions. That's why he's on my new Mount Rushmore.
Did your editor make you take anybody out?
No, you know, I was talking to the editor about two ideas that fell out. So one was, I mentioned Bill Bratton before in terms of predictive policing, you know, using computer statistics to find where crimes are committed, what time of day, who commits them. But I thought, you know, given what's been going on with Edward Snowden, even with the recent Apple case about the cell phone of the San Bernardino terrorist, I thought, you know, we should look at the national security state. And my instinct was to go back and look at the man who really was the father of that, and that's a man by the name of Wild Bill Donovan. Donovan was the man who put together the OSS the precursor of the CIA. And similarly, you would want to take a look at J. Edgar Hoover, really the father of the modern FBI. So that I was drawn to that story, but, you know, he said he thought that Bratton really filled the bill, and it would take us down so many complicated corridors to tell the story of Wild Bill Donovan. The other one I thought of, Joe, and I think this is going to be close to your heart, was to say American media is in such a new place with all the kind of niche audiences and niche channels and podcasts and technology.
Right.
How do we tell that story? And, of course, the root of American journalism, you have to go back to one of the great radio voices of all time, Edward R. Murrow.
Right.
And then you come forward to people like Cronkite. But then how do you get from that to Joe Donahue? How do you get to John Stewart? You know, how do you get to Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly? How do you get that? I was interested in that story, but, of course, I'm part of the media, so it would be a little bit of a conflict of interest. So we stayed away from it. But I think that's an important story to tell.
Absolutely. The book is fascinating, and it's a lot of fun to read. It's We the People. It's, you know, it's one of those books that, like anything, when somebody puts a top 10 list or the best places that you should go, they're fascinating, and then yet you're probably people are going to have their own lists as well, right?
Absolutely. And in fact, I would invite it because I think the heart of the idea is people would be engaged. This is not a book that I want people to think, oh my gosh, you know, it's like a no. This is a book that gets you talking, gets you in conversation with other people about, hey, America's changing, and we know it's changing very quickly. Oh my gosh, now I see it. You know, we had westward expansion, we've had civil war, but we're in another place of terrific and great change. So who would be on a list of the people that you would say belong as the change agents, the people who have shaped America today? I don't agree with Juan Williams. I think, and you'd say somebody else. You know, a lot of people say to me, why didn't you put Bill Gates up there? What about the people who were involved as business leaders today? Business is so different. And again, I understand. I'm willing to listen. Let's have the conversation. The book is like that. I think this is a book to get you talking and sharing with your friends and family.
Well, it's a lot of fun to get you talking. I always enjoy it. The book is We the People, the Modern Day Figures Who Have Reshaped and Affirmed the Founding Fathers' Vision of America. It is published by Crown. Juan, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe. I appreciate it.
Be well. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Again, the title of the book, We the People by Juan Williams, published by Crown. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.